Greetings. I am Shisada Akona Kamara, and welcome to Satsang with the Shambhala Center. You are beginningless. You are endless. You are divine.
Good evening, everybody. This is Shisada Akona Kamara, and you are listening to Satsang on BBS Radio. We're so pleased to have you with us again tonight, and we are ready to get started. So let's all take a deep breath, and I will clear the space. Mother, Father, God that I am, through the great central sun hierarchy, through the office of the Christ, through the order of Melchizedek, I call upon Archangel Michael to bring the sapphire blue ray. Cut away, cut away, cut away anything in all of our four lower vehicles not emanating directly from our I Am presence. I now call on Archangel Zachiel, keeper of the violet flame. Blaze, blaze, blaze the violet flame through all of our four lower bodies. Transmute, transmute, transmute all the psychic debris Michael has cut free. I now bring forth the invincible ring past knot and the mirror blue light of invisibility to completely surround each of us. And I call forth a shaft of pure Christ light, one to surround each one of us. And I ask that these shafts of light be brought to the center of the earth, where I call on Archangel Gabriel to seal them. And I ask that the legions of Michael completely surround each shaft of light. And now I ask that our vibrations be raised high above the psychic and astral worlds to the highest realm of illumined truth we each can attain at this time. And now, Mother, Father, God, we place ourselves in service to you and to humanity. And I place myself in service to all of you tonight. We ask that only that which is direct from you be permitted into our perceptions and that all else of the lower mind be kept out. And we ask that only that which is direct from you be permitted through us. And because we have asked this, we consider it so. So be it. Very good. Come on back to me. I hope for those of you who listen regularly that you catch the beginning of the program and that you stay with the program right until the very end. There's, I specifically set it up the way I did with the intro and the outro because there's something I say on there that is... you know, is very important, and it's not something that you hear in your everyday life, which is that you are beginningless, you are endless, and you are divine. I mean, who tells you that, right? But I'm telling you that, and I tell you that every week, every Thursday night, and again on Wednesday nights. And I want you to listen to that and allow yourself to really feel the resonance in it. Because it's true. It's true. And it's important that you kind of, on one level, feed that into your consciousness. Because it's not what the world's going to tell you. The world, by and large, is going to tell you lots of things, but you being divine is not one of them. That's one thing that conceptually I understood at a very young age. I can't remember where I first heard the word spoken, I am God, but I remember being quite small and being like, yeah, I mean, it was obvious. And then I also remember when I moved to Charlotte, you know, as an adult, there was a time, gosh, it may have been the second when I moved back to Charlotte after being gone. In fact, I'm sure it was. And I was in my car and I was heading to my job, and I had a local radio program on that was a very popular program here in Charlotte, daytime or morning and morning program. So the couple who was on it, you know, everyone knows who they are, but they had the person that they were talking about. He was some kind of celebrity. I don't know if he was a sports figure or who he was, but the guy made a comment. And the guy said, you know, my father always told me that I am God. And I'm listening to the radio. I'm like, yeah, right? Thumbing him up, of course. And then he'd finished his thing and was off. And then the two people whose show it was came on, and they were both cutting him down for saying that, you know. What a ridiculous thing to say, I am God. I mean, how full of yourself are you, right, from that place? And I was listening to it. Now, this is before I had done any dissolution work, right? But I was listening to that, and I was like, wow, they're so blinded. Like, they just don't see it. Something that, to me, is so obvious. I didn't exist in the concept that you weren't part of God. That was just... that's the only thing I've ever known to function from. Yet everything was part of God, you know. God's in everything. Therefore, he would be in me too. And you, and you, and you, right? Or it, or she, or however you want to term it. Doesn't matter. But it was so telling, because that's society. That's society. Society wants to take every opportunity, any place where you might feel secure and good about yourself, and society as a whole wants to take that and trash it. What can we do? Well, how can we knock him down a peg, right? There aren't many people in your world who want to lift you up. It's normally the opposite, right? Well, why? Just from a very innocent place, because if they can knock you down at the same time, like a scale, you know, they knock one side down, the other side lifts up. And that's why people do that. If I can take you down a peg, I'm going to lift up a peg. It'll make me feel better about me. Now, they don't recognize that. They can't see the psychological underpinnings of that. But that's what's going on, you know. And even in, you know, if you're a member of a church, I mean, how many churches out there are going to tell you you're God? Not many. They're still busy saying, here's Jesus, the only begotten Son of God. They don't seem to mesh, do they? The only begotten Son of God. How can I be God if there's only one, the only begotten Son of God? Oh, it means that puts you in a real quandary. How do I make that make sense? Well, you make it make sense from a very simple place, really. The Christ is the only begotten Son of God, because the Christ is singular, just as God is singular, just as lower mind is singular. It's all singular, right? The Christ being singular, and you as the Christ being part of the whole. Singular. So was Jesus the only begotten Son of God? Sure, but so are you and everyone else. Are you presenting as the Christ? Maybe not in this moment, but it doesn't mean the Christ isn't there. The Christ hasn't gone anywhere. Or the Christ is the intermediary between the I am that isn't even aware that this level of reality exists, and then the personal self, the one who believes that it is experiencing the level of reality that we call duality. And the Christ is the intermediary between both. So just because the physical form is experiencing what it's experiencing, it doesn't mean that the Christ itself disappeared, right? Do we, PLN, do we have on the website, on the BBS page, do we have a picture of the I Am and all that on there? Didn't we do that when we put up the protection?
I know we used to. I can check now.
The picture that we use for that is actually really perfect because it shows everything from the rays of light that you would, you know, like the causal body of God. And it shows the I Am stepping down to the Christ itself, stepping down to the physical self or the personal self, right? And anyone who is familiar with the I Am work, like the work of Elizabeth Clare Prophet, would know that image because that is an image that they use all the time. But it's a beautiful rendering of what's going on there because you see the Christ itself that sits between the two. And it can actually communicate on both ends. It's the bridge. And I love the terminology of the bridge because a lot of people on this planet right now who are doing this level of seeking really are here to be that bridge for humanity. Even before I understood dissolution work, I had an awareness that I was meant to be some kind of a bridging for humanity between misperception and then clear perception, you know. Go ahead.
It's not on there anymore.
Always gone. Is it on our website? Do we know? Tim, is it on our website? It's not. Well, where is it?
It's definitely on Facebook if they look through there. And I think if they go onto our YouTube page, they can actually listen to you say me.
But I don't have the image on there.
It's not in there?
No, I don't have the image. So we're going to have to work that out. Let's get that up there as soon as we can. Let's say that, let's put Tim on the spot. Tim, if I send you the image when I get home tonight or tomorrow morning, can you have it up by tomorrow afternoon on our website? Huh? Yes? Okay. So tomorrow after 3, everybody go to kumara.center, which is our new web address, kumara.center, and look for the image somewhere on that page. We'll let our webmaster figure out where to put it. But it's a beautiful, beautiful image. We have cards of the protection on one side with the image on the back so that you can actually, reference it. It's really, really powerful. Okay. So we're a long intro, really long intro. So listen to the intro of the session. And after the meditation music, don't just, jump out of meditation and flick BBS off. Like, listen to it through the end. Because you go into meditation at the end of our program, there's a purpose for that, which I hope you know by now, but there is a purpose. The purpose is that whatever comes up that can be released through these sessions energetically, I'm facilitating through the meditation music to help do that. And it gives you a space to allow that to occur, right? So go into the meditations and whatever comes, whatever song it is that comes each week is very specifically brought forward for whatever needs to move that night. So take advantage of those, and then stay in it through the end to get that reminder that you are beginningless. You are beginningless. There never was not a you. There never was not a you. And you are endless because there will never not be a you. Never. You remain always perfect and whole because you are divine. And that is your true nature. You are beginningless and endless, and you are divine. Now, it doesn't mean that what you see in the world is divine the way you would conceptualize divine, but it's all divine. We just ended our Charlotte session with that piece. I think it was Megan brought it forward. Megan or Justin, one of them brought it forward. That piece that it's the adversity. The gift is in the adversity, you know, that the ego runs around trying to find stasis, and it runs around chasing after the things that it views as positive, the things that will make it feel good, happy, peaceful, joyful, right? It chases those things. And it does it in any means possible. However, it equates, like, this leads to that. So money will solve all my problems because it'll alleviate the suffering that I am going through because I don't have it. So someone chases money because they're looking for the end result, right? The peace or the joy. But in doing so, you actually are missing the point completely. And it takes, you know, remember the dissolution work, the way that we do our work, it's like it takes the way you view the world and it turns it completely on end. And it shows you that you're functioning exactly the opposite of how you're meant to function here if you want to walk off the life-death cycle. The adversity is your gift. The adversity is the divine beckoning you back home. It's the adversity. You all have it in your head that it's the opposite. Oh, it's me finding peace, you know, in the perfect job, or me finding peace in a perfectly manicured backyard where I can sit and meditate and all the birds will be there and I'll bring the birds in. We'll have the flowers and the wind chimes and, you know, that's God. And so you run from all the other stuff, running towards something that isn't going to bring growth, running away from the exact thing that can bring growth. And when I say growth, I mean your own evolution, you know, your return to Christed consciousness. It's in the adversity. So stop running from it. You're not here to see anything as separate because nothing is separate. Nothing is separate. We just did a little fun thing at the end of our session here. Very spontaneous. I had everybody stand up and we all grabbed hands, you know. And I looked around at everybody and I said, you know, you teach one of them, you are individuated, right? We're standing in a circle and everyone can see each person individuated. But we've got our hands linked, but not separated, because we're all one unit, one unit. And the problem with the world is that as soon as we let go of each other's hands in the world, we see separation. And what we can't see is that the space between is what connects one thing to the next, because it's not space at all. It's still energy. You just can't see it with physical eyes that are based in polarity. The physical eyes can only see duality. The inner sight sees beyond duality, but physical eyes see duality. So because you don't see the rays of light that comprise the space between things, you see things as separate. And that's part of the illusion of what's going on here. So when you move through the world, I was likening it to being like, you know, moving through Jell-O, if you can kind of imagine that. You're sticking your hand through a huge bowl of Jell-O. You know, what happens? Well, the Jell-O conforms itself around your hand as you push it in. There's no space between them, which isn't true because scientifically there's only space between them, but beyond that. the experience here is that you wouldn't experience space between them. You would tactilely, you know, feel the jello on your skin, right? And so it's no different. As you move through the world, you are that, like moving through the jello of space, the way you perceive space to be. And so you can see if you're moving through something that has, you know, mass, right? Then it would create a ripple effect everywhere, wouldn't it? Well, it does. So on that level, what you can see is that we are interconnected, we are interrelated, and we are interdependent. Interconnected, interrelated, and interdependent. That's partially why I'm here doing the work that I'm doing, why the Kamara Center is here manifested to do the work that we're doing, because it's time to raise the level of consciousness on the planet to where the collective can once again recognize that we are individuated, but we are not separated, and we are all interconnected, interrelated, and interdependent. And then from that space, we can function as a whole, one unit, right? Individuated, but never separated. One unit. Scientists see this on a biological level all over the place, right? From the level of the earth and the biosystems of the earth, they'll say you can't affect one without affecting all of it, because everything is what? Interconnected, interrelated, interdependent. What happens if, you know, the algae in the sea isn't growing the way it's supposed to grow? Well, then those things that feed on the algae don't have the food, and then that collapses, and then that leads to the next collapse, which leads to the next collapse, because everything is interdependent. So on a scientific scale, this is nothing new. It's nothing new. Human consciousness just raised itself to a level where it believes it exists outside of that construct, and it doesn't. It just doesn't. And we as a whole have to wake up to that level of awareness. And that's our work. That's where dissolution work comes in. You can't reach that level of awareness until you dissolve out the personal self, because the personal self holds itself separate. That's what it does. That's what it's programmed to do. It can't do anything but that. It's all it's programmed to do. When that piece falls away, now it's the opposite, you know. So the personal self can only see itself as separate. And beyond that, the Christ itself can only see the one self everywhere. One is real, one is not. But it's experiential. It's completely experiential. So you can cognize it, you can intellectualize it, you can hold it as a belief, but until you experience it, it's not actually yours yet. And that's kind of that's putting it in a, it's not actually true. It can't not be yours because it's your nature, right? But on the level of the personal self, right? Can't be yours until the experience is there. I have to talk in paradox all the time. Makes it challenging. If you have teachers who aren't talking in paradox, pay attention to that. Because that's what this is. You know, reality on this level is absolutely the polar opposite of reality outside of this level. So you have to speak in paradox. Because what is real here is not real there. we had a good example of that tonight. I did a whole thing on the board. I like drawing these little pictures sometimes. So I was trying to show everyone here what the personal self experiences as far as when it looks at anything outside of it, which would be anything outside of it. So I used the example of like a husband and a wife, right? And I was showing them how the, in this case, the husband, you know, when he has an issue and he looks back at God in the form of wife, what he sees is not her. He sees the mirror of himself, right? It's all a projection. So he projects onto the reality of her as God. He projects his own unhealed stuff onto her. This is how the mind hides it. This is how it hides it so effectively. Because it will take the pieces that you have not been willing to own yet, right? And it will project them out on another. And in doing so, it gives you something to attach judgment to. And on top of attaching the judgment to it, it allows you to feel justified in judging it. You see? Because in doing it, you can't see it as you. You see it as them. And remember when I started the program and I talked about how if I knock you down a peg, I come up a peg, right? Well, that's exactly what's going on there. If I judge you, in my judging you, it lifts me above you, you see, in my own perception. It lifts me above you. So how in there is the average person going to see themselves? The average person, if they walked into satsang here, if they even understood a piece of what I was saying, most likely they wouldn't understand anything that I was saying. But if they did, they would argue with me over and over and over again when I tell them that you're not separate from everything and that everything you're experiencing in the world is all you. They would say, you're crazy. Because look at all the proof I have. You're not me. My kids aren't me. My husband's not me. The mailman's not me. That tree's not me. I mean, you know, that's where they would sit. And that's their reality. It's very true for them. Because they can't, it hides so effectively, you know, within the program. It's very hard to see it. And that's why the work that we do using meditation and then also doing the processing work that we do, it trains the mind to slow down, where you start to recognize that the same story is presenting itself in all of those others, that the name and the form changes with every story, but the story that is underneath it is always the same story. That's a big wake-up call for people, you know? For those of you listening out there, have you gotten there yet? I don't know how long you've been listening to me. But that's a huge thing when you actually recognize it. You first recognize, oh my gosh, I had an altercation with my 5-year-old. 2 days later, I had an altercation with the bank teller. And I had a moment where I saw it was the same exact story. It didn't matter who the other was. It was all about X, you know, whatever the story was that was playing itself out. That's huge. You start to see on that level and you can't turn it off. It's beautiful. That's where it starts to dissolve, you know, because you see it everywhere. It's very surreal initially because the lower mind will feel like it's going crazy. It truly will feel like it's going crazy because what you're seeing is so far out of the realm of normal, you know. You ever see that movie? I mean, maybe one of you can tell me. There was a movie that was made quite some time ago, and the dude in the movie had these sunglasses. And when he had the sunglasses on, he saw all these subliminal messages that the rest of the world couldn't see, and he could only see it with the sunglasses. Justin, do you know the name of that? I'm sorry, I can't hear you.
It's called They Live.
They Live. Yeah, yeah. It's profound because that's true. That's the level of awakening that you move into. You see something that no one else can see. Well, not no one else, but very few. When you see, when you recognize those who see it too, there's this moment where you see it in each other, you know, recognition. And it's heart to heart. It's beautiful. Nothing needs to be said. It's just recognition. But that's what's going on, you know. And you move, just one second, you move into space. Remember, I've told you that there are three major roles that play themselves out in the story. There's the victim and the perpetrator, of course, because if there's no perpetrator, there can't be a victim. There has to be a bad guy in order to be a good guy, and there has to be a good guy for there to be a bad guy, because this is polarized. And then there's the thing that works between them, which is the savior, you know, the messiah, the thing everybody is looking to. And the savior's there to what? To help swing the victim out of its experience of victimhood, or to save the perpetrator from being the bad guy. So when you do this work enough and you see that pattern playing out over and over, now you go out into the world and you go to your job, you know, or you go to the grocery store, or you go anywhere, and now it's it. Victim, perpetrator, savior, victim. Victim, victim, victim. Oh, perpetrator. Big time savior. Right? And that's what it becomes, you know. It's not personal at all. It's just, one role after another. Everyone's just playing the role. Completely unconscious. Playing the role. Now you're moving into a level where you're beginning to actually become conscious. Seeing through it. That right there is huge. It's enormous. Justin, did you have a question? Come on over.
Well, I don't really have a question so much as something that just popped into my head that I wanted to comment on.
Speak right into the microphone.
Okay. In the beginning, you were talking about how God the Father has no awareness that any of this is actually going on. And it occurred to me that that idea is the only scenario where you could still have a loving God, but still have all this stuff going on in the world that we see all the time. A lot of people get hung up on, well, if God's so loving, then how come all these kids are starving and all that kind of stuff? And I just wanted to share that I think it's beautiful that there's still a loving God there. It's the only picture that allows that to exist, that there's a loving God and seemingly suffering going on at the same time, because the suffering is our story, like you're saying. Because I see a lot of speakers, and it's a popular way to, you know, convert people to atheism, for example. Well, how could a loving God exist if all this stuff is happening, because he's not loving? And so I just wanted to share that, because it's not something you hear every day, you know? And so I guess that's pretty much it, that God is love. It's allowing you to experience this suffering, basically, is the way I'm seeing it. And you know, you're upset because he's not, you know, answering your prayers or whatever you think he needs to be doing for you, but he's giving you what you need at the highest level of truth, and you just can't see it yet. So that's what.
So I'm going to correct you on one thing, and that is that there's no he and you. You see, because even the verbiage there throws the whole thing out of whack, because you are the God that has now created this reality that you're walking in. You are a co-creator with God. You're doing it every second. You've created this external reality that you're walking in, that's just a mirror of the internal level of consciousness. So God didn't disappear. God's not out there, you know. You see, you are that. But the level of awareness that's functioning here is unconscious, whereas God is conscious, right? And that there's a movement there that, you know, and that's the point in seeing through it. When you see through it, that allows that level of consciousness to be present here. And that's all that is here at that level of consciousness is love. You know, you still see all the suffering in the world and you see people's pain and everything, but you don't attach to the story of it because at that point, the story doesn't exist for you, you know, and you see the divine everywhere and you see the gift everywhere that we were talking about earlier, that there's the gift in the adversity. It's the adversity that people have slapped a negative label on, right? Well, that's where, you know, that's your return home ticket, right? You had like this one-way ticket into duality that seemingly has no way out. And God's constantly throwing you another ticket, right? And that's what's going on. You know, the self, capital S, is constantly throwing you a return ticket, but you keep throwing them away. Or you keep saying, I don't want that. I don't want it. But you don't recognize what it is you're saying no to, right? And if people could just see that that's what's going on, just that one piece, I think a lot of people would start really looking. Because on that level, of course, it is just the lower mind that's going to play the role anyway. But even that level of mind would start to go, oh, you mean there is? Because we have to remember what the lower mind wants more than anything is union, right? Because its experience as consciousness was that there was the state of union, which in language is that's not accurate because union even signifies that there's more than one, doesn't it? So it's this perfect state. And then it moved into something other than. So it's constantly trying to get back to, right? And that's its overriding desire. That's why everyone does what they do in the world. All of it. It's this constant, I want to go back. You know, but at the same time, that ego that wants to go back is also going to play the ego that is angry at God for doing this to me. That's what you're hearing in the world. All these people, you know, if God loves us, why does God, you know, allow these terrible things to happen? And there are lots of answers for that on different levels. But the reality is that you as God are the one creating the suffering, you see. And from another level, and I've said this to all my students at different points, you know, if you think of it from a purely intellectual, rational place, right, you have to remember that the ego wants to personify God. So that's what religion has done for the most part. Hinduism didn't do that. But for the most part, religion has personified God. It gave God these human attributes. God's a guy, first of all, of course. And God is what? He's old. He's got to be old and he's got to have like a beard and, you know, he wears a long robe and, you know, whatever it is. So because it personifies, I think your mic is still on. You might want to kick that. Because it personifies all of that, it can't begin to wrap itself around the reality of what's going on here. So it's going to take all of the stuff that the human consciousness thinks of as, you know, being a good person, being a bad person and doing all that. And it slaps it all on God. God is love. Oh, yes. And I can see that in the world. But God is judgment. And oh, yes, I can see that in the world. And of course, the mind comes up with all of this. So anything it's looking for, it's going to find. Any argument it wants to make, it's going to find support for, right? Because the ego plays all of it. So you're looking for proof that God doesn't exist, you'll find it. Are you looking for proof that God exists? You'll find it. And everything in between. You'll find proof that God's schizophrenic, sometimes judgmental, sometimes loving. You know, you'll find proof of all of it if you're looking for it. And that's the key. The key is to stand outside of it and to recognize, oh, you know, a God that is not personal wouldn't have any attachment to the experience of itself, even as a polarized being, would it? If energy is just energy and it's not good or bad, it's just energy until human consciousness slaps a label on it and says that that energy is bad energy and this energy is good feeling energy, right? If energy is just energy, then what would it matter what energy happens to be moving? It wouldn't, you see? It wouldn't. So you as the story of your suffering, right, being experienced even by God, why would God feel a need to stop it? If there's no story behind it, it's just experience, right? It's very rational. The ego is a highly emotional thing from a very rational place. I mean, just look at that. Even if God was aware on that level, if the I am, we'll bring it to the I am. If the I am presence was aware that, you know, you as an extension of it existed in this reality and was experiencing suffering, would it have an opinion? Well, no. What's there to have an opinion over? An extension of myself that's experiencing life. Okay. Linda doesn't like that. Linda's old story would not have liked that. No, not at all. Because that's very uncomfortable. Because I want to own my suffering. I want to own my suffering. I want to own my suffering. And not only that, I want God to feel bad that I had to suffer. Because it was God's fault that I'm stuck here suffering. And I want God to feel my anger toward him that I'm suffering and to experience my rage. And I want to hurt him like he hurt me. You see what's going on here? If you don't see God as a personal thing and you see God as energy that is impersonal, all of that completely falls away. It can't even exist. There was a moment in my journey. I wouldn't even call it a conversation with God. I was reaming God out. Screaming out loud in my bedroom, right? Letting all of that pent up anger come forward, you know, at how betrayed I felt, how abandoned I felt, how all of that stuff, I was just letting it all move and I was in it. And there was a moment that was so perfect. It's a moment that everybody experiences at some point in their journey. There was a moment where the question came of, you know, it was the thing of, you know, you think you're so great, God. And if you wanted to just turn me off in a second, wipe me out, annihilate me, you could do it. And I have no control over that because you could do it right now. And I was so angry thinking, I have no control over that. And you could do it right now. And I was furious. And then something crept in and it went, well, so what if he did? You wouldn't be around to notice it anyway. And the whole thing just fell apart. And I just laughed and laughed and laughed. And I was like, oh, yeah, it's really that simple. It's really that simple. If you were turned off, you wouldn't know it anyway. Right? So what's the big deal? What's the big deal? Why hang on to all of this stuff? Because in the long run, what would it matter? It wouldn't. You know, and it was the moment of recognizing that on this level that I was moving through at the time, that I, as this personal self being, was at the utter mercy of the divine, right? there was a surrender that happened in that moment that was enormous, just enormous. And that's a level of surrender that everybody moves into, but it's always comes after. It's not a doing, you know, it's a being that you function in a state of surrender. It's not an action. It's a beingness. Yeah. So people ask, how do I surrender? Well, the ego doesn't surrender, you know, it won't surrender. It's primal. So just like an animal, it's going to fight. It's going to fight if it feels threatened. But the you that is not that exists in the state of surrender, you see. It is the divine will moving through, not attached to anything, not attached to anything. And you can exist as an individuated aspect within that, but not be separate. And mind can't get itself around that because it's a chasm. It can't make the leap, you see, from one side of the chasm to the other. It can't. So do you have any question about anything you do? Yeah.
Yeah, that reminded me of something we were talking about last week with the shadow from the flame.
Yeah.
And so a thought that I had was that this life we seem to be living is the shadow.
Yes.
Kind of.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes.
And so then I was wondering when you talk about being in the moment, if this, because we're functioning from the past and projecting to the future, kind of. So we're, you know, I feel like we're not even in the moment right now. Even if you you watch your watch, it's like, all right, I'm in it. that's not really the moment. To me, it seemed like the real moment is where God, that awareness of God, is just eternity. So I wanted to ask that and see if that was the right track of thinking or not.
Thinking. Yeah. So, and that's accurate. You're watching your watch thinking you're in the moment, but you can't be, because as you watch the watch, there's expectation. Your expectation is it just moved, and your expectation is it's going to move again. You see? So you're already out of it. You're already out of it. But to be purely present means that time stops. And it's an interesting, thing, because you still experience, movement, right? You'll still experience movement, but time stops. There's no sense of time in it. And the movement doesn't have a story attached to it either. There's just no story. So it's witnessed, but there's no story. You know, in order for there to be a story, the ego has to be there, right? The ego can't exist without a story, because it's built out of a story, right? So if you, to be the present moment, the ego can't be there. It just can't. And that's the piece that I keep trying to bring people back to, as far as this greater state of awareness that never left you, that you are, and you will have experiences in your life that are from that level of awareness, but you don't recognize it when you're in it. Right? Because in the ego, you can observe the ego. It's observable. Right? There's a witness. The witness can watch the personal story going on. Something watches the witness. When you're in it and you are awareness, there's no story, because there's no one observing. There's no one there to observe. Just awareness. So in that space, you are all of it, you see? Just awareness. Mm-hmm. How are we doing, Pelion? Two minutes? Okay. All right. I'm trying to think if there's anything I need to say to wrap it up. Oh, I will just say quickly, maybe we can come back to this next week, because there was a point that I was trying to get to tonight and it didn't get there. The personal self, right, when it's looking back and it sees everything as God, so all the resistance that it experiences, is that's God. Now, it's not conscious, people. You're still going to see it as, I'm mad at my husband, I'm mad at the dog, I'm mad at, you know, the grass for growing too fast. So what everyone's always looking for is validation for the story, okay? So I want you to start watching for that in your own life. When you have, you know, you had a crummy day and you come home and your partner, you know, spew all this stuff on your partner and they don't give you what you wanted in return. Why is it that it upsets you, right? You got to really look at it and you recognize, oh, it's because they didn't validate my story. They didn't support me as victim, because that's what I was looking for. I wanted someone to say, yeah, you were victimized. Yeah, you got the wrong end of that stick. I'm so sorry. You know, God, I hate that for you. Life just sucks for you, doesn't it? And when you don't get it, you get angry. But recognize that God, you know, you want that from God. You want it from your spouse, that's God. You want it from God, you're not going to get it from God, because it's a story. It's a story that's not real. And God can only see you as perfect and whole as you are. God doesn't see the story and go, oh, poor baby. Because God sees through the story. What are you here to do? You're here to see through it. See through it, see through it, see through it. Not change it, see through it. That's what God can see all the time. And you as God will see that all the time too. Keep plugging away. Do your work. Okay, we're gonna do a nice, peaceful meditation song tonight. And I hope you all stay with it. And again, please stay through the end so that you can enjoy hearing me tell you what you are as a divine being. I love you all so much. And we will be with you again next week on Satsang. Thank you. You are divine.